Well, welcome to the Cut for Time podcast here at the Canton United Methodist Church. My name is Pastor Clem, joined by Eric Stearns, and we are just coming off of Holy Week. Thank God we did it. Everything went as well as it could have gone. We navigated all of the intricacies of this week, and so Eric and I are together to talk a little bit about Sunday's message, just about what the Gospel of Mark is and why it functions the way that it does, and then just, you know, just some of those nuts and bolts of behind-the-scenes looks at what happens the week after Holy Week in the life of a pastor. So let's get into it.
Sounds good. One thing I always wondered about, what's the wind down for a pastor after Easter look like?
Yeah, so I ended up taking Monday off. That's not entirely true. I did some prep work for next week because as the famous sermon says, Sunday's coming. No matter where we are, no matter what we're doing, there's always the next Sunday coming. And so I was putting together my bulletin, getting that off to my musicians and my office manager. So that our musician can pick the hymns and songs for Sunday, which is Jenna, and find special music, and then getting that to Sarah so we can get the bulletin ready, and then starting to work on the newsletter because we have a newsletter coming out this week, and then just kind of catching up with my family because I didn't really see them for 3 days. I mean, between Thursday and Sunday, and both Thursday and Sunday, it was pretty much just all go all the time. And so it was nice to just have a relaxing day where we just didn't do a whole lot. We watched a couple movies. I took a nap. It was awesome. And then today I spent about an hour and a half unburying my office because my office became the dumping ground for all of the things that we either used or moved during the week and then had to move for Sunday before we found them an actual home. So I did that for about an hour and a half and just kind of did some more prep work for Sunday's sermon. It's kind of moving pretty slow because last week was pretty intense. There's a lot of emotions that happen. And then just, you know, the challenge is I, as pastor and leader, get to lead you all through these experiences that are designed to bring you closer to Jesus throughout this entire week. But when I have a hard time when I'm leading of really engaging in those things. And so it's trying to find ways to make Holy Week a reality in my life for my own spiritual nourishment, to walk through those things, not as a leader, not as a pastor, but as a worshiper seeking Christ. And so I've gone back and watched a couple services from friends of mine on YouTube, just kind of as a way of participating in a worship service that I didn't have to plan and lead. But it's mainly just, you know, taking a gigantic sigh of relief, and if there's any fires to put out, putting out the fires, and then just going from there. So mercifully, there were no fires this week, and so it was pretty just kind of getting back into a, okay, what's next, type of a rhythm. So
if you call Easter the Super Bowl as a pastor, is there a Super Bowl letdown afterwards? Do you feel you've built to this pinnacle, this big moment in the church, is it really hard to get ready for the next week?
Yeah, it is. I mean, because you want to do everything in your power to kind of harness the excitement of the previous week. And like, you know, that's why at the end of worship on Sunday, I was like, hey, we're going to linger here in the resurrection. Like, come on back and let's talk more about this. Let's, you know, this is so central to our identity as Christians. So let's talk about how this resurrection impacted other people along the way as a way of like owning how it has impacted us. And so like just having that moment of invitation and just trying to like, okay, how do we continue to build on this rather than just let it all go? That's why like last year was so hard because Easter was so late. And actually next year, Easter is going to be on 420. So like it's going to be late again when you get so close to the end of the program year, because like all of our stuff, all of our midweek stuff, everything shuts down at the end of April. Like last year, everything just died after Easter. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that because it's earlier in the month, that won't actually happen, but it could happen that, you know, we're looking around in 2 weeks and saying, oh, what all happened? It was all so exciting. And then it wasn't. And so Yeah, it's just kind of weighing that balance of, letting it be okay, but also just wanting people to continue developing in their faith and continuing to cling to this story, that is so central to us. And so I don't have good answers, or, I've never, don't think I feel like I've never navigated that perfectly, but, just hoping to put some pieces together that will move us forward in our faith. So.
So then the natural next question is, what's harder to prep for? Holy Week or the week after Holy Week?
A good question. I still think Holy Week, just because there are so many moving parts that all have to come together at just the right time. And people are willing to get in and grind it out because it's Holy Week. Like we on Thursday, perfect example, where we had literally all the help that we needed on Thursday to get the Living Last Supper up. Like we had Living Last Supper up and ready in an hour and a half, like from pull up to the school till that sigh of relief of everything is set and ready to go, and we actually have everything ready to go, hour and a half tops. I mean, it was awesome. And but people are so much more willing to jump in because they know it's Holy Week, the week after Easter. I mean, like we don't even have, like and I'm not this isn't a dig, we don't even have a choir on Sunday, like and fair play, because they did a great job Sunday singing two different songs, and so, but it's still just like, as a pastor, there's still work to do. So yeah, I do think that, but it is more just normal ministry rather than all the moving parts.
Sure. Yep, makes sense. So your sermon was, or the service was covering Mark chapter 16, and how the women go to the tomb, see that someone's, or that no one's there, get told no one's there, and then go tell anyone. And so can we cover that again? Why did they not tell anyone? And then let's
Sure.
talk about the alternate endings that other people have written for it.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I mean that is what it is. I mean, the women, we are told in Mark's gospel, like we are told in other gospels, that an assortment of the women go to the tomb. It's Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and John, and Salome. And so it is this group of women that go to the tomb, and just like you said, that their concern as they're walking along is, hey, that's a big rock. How are we going to move the big rock? Then they get there and like, oh wait, the rock is already moved. That's interesting. Let's look inside. There's no one there except for a young man, either sitting or standing, where they're expecting to find the body of Jesus. And they're coming with spices, and like the practical reality of why they're going is because dead bodies smell. They are expecting to find the body of Jesus. They're expecting it not to smell very good, so they have spices to make it better. But what they find is this divine presence that says, you're looking for Jesus of Nazareth. I know why you're here. But let me tell you, he has gone on ahead of you to Galilee. Go tell the disciples and tell Peter that to go to Galilee. And we're going to talk, hold on to that thought for a couple of weeks. We're going to talk about why the angel says, go tell the disciples and Peter, because Peter's got through his whole thing of denying Jesus and like maybe he's not a disciple anymore. No, go tell the disciples and Peter, that this is where you're supposed to go. You're supposed to go to Galilee, which is, where it all began. So the women are, this is not what they were expecting. This is outside of their realm of mental comprehension. And so they are terrified. They are bewildered. They're confused. And they just, what are we supposed to do with this? And so we are told that they tell nothing to anybody. They don't say a word. And that's how the Gospel of Mark ends. And like historians, Bible translators, people that are far smarter than I am, all agree that the linguistic style between Mark 16:8, where it ends, and then the longer ending of Mark 16:8, which is called the shorter ending of the Gospel of Mark, the Greek is too different for it to be the same writer. Just like we have personal writing styles and phrase things differently, this isn't that. This is not Mark's writing. It is something different. And so it ends with them leaving the tomb, dejected, demoralized, defeated, the end of the word of the end of the gospel. Yeah.
So essentially they didn't believe the person that was there.
Mm-hmm. They either didn't believe or they just, I just don't think that they could mentally wrap their heads around what was going on, And like, if we read this in concert with Luke's gospel, when the women do finally go and tell the disciples, they think that they're lying. The disciples don't believe them. They regard their words as idle chatter. They get a little bit misogynistic and say, it's just the women. They don't know what they actually saw, And then linking that to John's gospel, Peter and John take off to the tomb because they want to verify what they've just been told, And so, not to try and harmonize Mark with the rest of them, but, that's how the gospel ends. It ends very abruptly. And then we just get to sit in the midst of that yuck until we read another gospel.
Weird. What mm-hmm. do the other endings say?
So Mark was the first gospel written. Like, Mark is the original story of the gospels. And it could be, I was actually doing some research on this earlier. One of the commentaries I read said that because it was at the end, it could be that it was at the end of a scroll that got, lost to history. So that there was more to the story. And so what historians have filled in, or what other people have filled in, is kind of the same story as the rest of the Gospels, where they do finally meet with Jesus, and then Jesus commissions them to go to do the work of spreading the gospel. So that the message of the gospel does not end right there with bewildered women that are too stunned to speak. And so, like, that's the general gist of what happens next, is very similar to what we get from Luke and John and the start of the book of Acts. Like, it kind of all just morphs into one block of tradition added to the end of Mark's gospel.
Okay.
Yep.
So you've kind of talked about it, but let's talk about it a little bit again.
Yeah.
What are the differences? I know there's differences between all four. Which gospel kind of carries on a little bit longer and kind of covers some of the Acts stuff?
Luke.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. Luke is the one that links to Acts. Yep. Yep. So Matthew's gospel has the disciples meeting with Jesus, and then Jesus giving them what we call the Great Commission, to go therefore into all the world and preach the message of the gospel, baptize people, and I'll be with you to the end of the age. Luke's gospel kind of pushes towards what's going to happen in Acts, because Luke and Acts were written by the same person. So the story really just kind of goes on. That Jesus hung out for a while, and like, then the book of Acts begins with the ascension. So we get more teaching from Jesus in Luke because it's going to move on to the ascension eventually. John's gospel gives us the breakfast on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, where, Peter's like, well, I'm going to go fishing because I don't know what to do with any of this. So I'm just going to go fishing. I know what to do when I'm fishing. I don't know what to do with any of the rest of this. I'm going to go fishing. And the disciples are like, all right, cool, we'll go with you. And then they bring in more fish than they could ever fathom bringing in. And they know that it has to be because Jesus is there. And like, Jesus is this unknown figure on the shore, doing the things. And then Peter has his moment of restoration with Jesus. And then, Peter starts to ask some questions about John. And then John talks about how he's the beloved disciple. He's the one that's writing these things. And, he's the one that the ends up living the longest. But they are all very different in the way that they end, but even in the way they present the resurrection story. In the synoptic gospels, which would be Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Mary Magdalene and other women come to the tomb. And in John's account, the women, it's just Mary Magdalene. It's just Mary that has this moment with Jesus. In Matthew, Jesus appears to the women before they tell the disciples. In John, Jesus appears to Mary Magdalene, and then she reports to the disciples. In Matthew and Mark, it is one angel that appears. In Luke and John, there are two angels. And in Mark, like we talked about, the women don't say a thing. There's one angel, tells them to go to Galilee, tells them to tell the disciples to go to Galilee. And then that's the end. So
in all of them, it's always the women,
mm-hmm.
or one or a group, yep. And at least one angel.
Yep.
It's interesting that it's all different.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. And actually I read, so there's a website out there called Got Answers, which is about giving, you know, good answers to biblical questions. And one of the answers that they gave on their website, because someone asked this very question, because why are they so different? And does that mean that the Bible contradicts itself? And no, is basically the answer. But God Answers says that the news of Jesus' resurrection produced so much excitement in Jerusalem, and in the ensuing chaos, many different people went different directions. And so different groups were separated, and several groups paid different visits to the tomb, and possibly more than once. And also, there was some mention of, like, if you are going to be, you know, it would look too suspicious if the stories were too similar. Skeptics would say, well, they obviously, you know, they got together and they wrote these endings, or, you know, Mark wrote this ending and Matthew and Luke, you know, basically just copied it. If it was too similar, it wouldn't be believable either. And so the fact that it is similar enough, that has the hallmarks of the same story, actually speaks to its authenticity.
Sure. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Sidebar. I love this story about, I can't remember if it was a reporter or who it was, but whoever, they were talking about how they had actually come to Jesus during the Watergate trial, because there were 12 men on that jury who could not keep their mouth shut about what they were and they kept changing their story of whether they thought Nixon was guilty or not.
Uh-huh.
And within 2 days, they all changed their story, and no one could keep quiet on this whole thing. There were 12 men who followed Jesus, told the same story for the rest of their lives, and died for it. So if that can be true, and what 12 real men did with Nixon, Christianity has to be true. I was like, yep, that makes perfect sense.
Wow, I never heard that story before.
Yep. Fascinating, isn't it?
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up. I'll send it to you.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So anyway, but yes, I think that does speak well to the authenticity of mm-hmm. of the Gospels, that
yep.
maybe they were like, guys, we can't make this all sound the same. Otherwise, they're going to be...
Right. Even though they're written, you know, like... the timeline doesn't work out for that, but like,
right.
you can still hear it though. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can, you know, that someone took their time to get their story straight, or that, you know, that someone edited it so that the stories would be straight. You know, just that somehow it would be fishy if they were all the same. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be like, you know, if we were taking a test and sitting next to each other, and we all, and I copied off of you, you know, the teacher would say that we all had the same answers and got the same questions wrong in the exact same way. We would be getting a see you after class notice on that test.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, they were all written at different times and in different places,
mm-hmm.
the Gospels, and they've all essentially kept the same text since they were originally written. So there's no argument to be made that they work together,
right,
or that they've been changed. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
There are enough differences, because Luke was working from different information because he had eyewitness accounts, and Matthew, like we talked about before on the podcast, is trying to ground Jesus' identity as a Jewish Messiah. You know, and mm-hmm. so that's gonna lend different bents to how they tell certain things.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked how you kind of I like the ending of the sermon where you talked about how maybe this is an opportunity to write our own ending to this story, or that Jesus isn't done writing the ending to this story. Mm-hmm. I liked that, and it's just kind of a good thought exercise of, well, what does Jesus really want this to look like?
Right.
You know, and where do we fall short? Where do we fit in more than where do we fall short? Where do we fit into the end of that story? And how can we do what Jesus wants us to do to kind of wrap this up, right?
Yeah, definitely. That idea first percolated for me as I was listening to the Pulpit Fiction podcast, which is a podcast I listen to for sermon prep. It's a United Methodist pastor and a UCC pastor. They've been friends for a very, very long time, and they'll take the lectionary texts and walk through them. It's a really, really solid podcast that I like to use quite a bit. But Eric Fissler was talking about how, you know, just the ending of the gospel is so weird because it ends with a preposition, and it just sits there. You know, it is just the word in Greek gar, but in English for. And that just lends itself to the story not being truly over. And one of the things I didn't quite know how to work into it, and I don't think the sermon would have benefited from, is that because it ends with a conjunction, it kind of circles back to the very start of the gospel. Like, because the opening words of the Gospel of Mark are, this is the beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, like the Messiah. And so because it ends with a conjunction or a preposition, it loops back around. You know, like this is how it begins, and this is how it begins again. And so if we want to live in a way that if we want to have a faith where we meet Jesus, what are we supposed to do? Go back to the start of the gospel and read it again, and like really meet Jesus in the midst of these stories, really meet Jesus in the midst of these incidents. And then just, you know, it's a continuous cycle of how do we grow closer to Jesus? We go back to the gospel. We return to the story again and again and again, and let it continue to change us and continue to be so formed in us that our life then becomes the gospel to somebody else. And so it just kind of becomes this cycle, this perpetual cycle where we're stuck in this loop reading the Gospel of Mark over and over and over again. So, which I don't, you know, it's not a bad idea, but I did not quite know how to weave that into the sermon. And so I just left that on the cutting room floor.
What is the next sermon series, or how are, you know, you close the service with talking about to come back, and this story is not over yet. Mm-hmm. And so what does the next week look like?
Yeah. So this week we're going to be talking about Thomas. We're going to be looking at how the resurrection was not real to Thomas until Jesus offered for Thomas to manipulate his body. You know, Jesus in John's gospel, Jesus appears to the disciples. Thomas, for whatever reason, isn't there. And so the disciples are like, hey, Thomas, you're never going to believe this. Jesus showed up, yo. And Thomas is like, well, you're right. I don't believe it. I won't believe it unless I see it myself. I won't believe it unless I touch his scars. I won't believe it. And so we call him Doubting Thomas. So it's going to be looking at what does Thomas need in order to believe?
Right.
And Jesus provides that. And what I find so interesting about this passage of scripture is that we're never told that Thomas actually touches Jesus. We're just told that Jesus makes the offer. Jesus knew what Thomas needed in order to believe. And Jesus knows what we need. And so what is it that we need? What is it that Jesus can offer to us and provide to us so that we can believe? And how can we find that by looking to Thomas's story, by looking to the resurrection, and then by participating in this meal called Holy Communion, where we have the opportunity to physically, you know, symbolically hold the body and blood of Christ in our hand and be strengthened in the meal. So that'll be where we go on Sunday.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Perfect.
Yep.
Well, thanks for joining us in this week's Cup for Time podcast. Join us again next week in person at 10 a.m. or back here for the podcast next week.
Thanks for listening to our Cup for Time conversation. Join us for worship in person or on Facebook Live Sundays at 10 o'clock Central Time. And now go in peace and serve the Lord.